The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Centre Parks. Spot rare wildlife, explore the forest, and have endless adventures together.
Yeah, so bring your day to the office. We're going to talk about that later on. But actually, before we do that, we're going to talk to Siobhan Lawless, who's on the phone. And this is a fascinating story. You're going to know the brand when we talk about it, but it's an interesting story in itself, how a dairy farm turns into a bakery, and lots of ups and downs in between. Siobhan Lawless, good morning to you.
Good morning, Oliver.
What part of the world are you? You're in...
Well, outside of Athenry. Our postal address is Athenry, but we really are in Fialbas, about sort of 5 miles outside Athenry.
Brilliant. So you're in the fields of Athenry, but you are the person behind the foods of Athenry.
That would be right, yes.
Which is a huge baking success story. I know it. I pick it up myself, especially the fancy crackers. So myself,
well, I hope you buy plenty, Oliver.
Yeah, myself and all the Blur fans on their way to Bloom are getting our chutneys and the foods of Athenry. This is it's an incredible story. You're out in Athenry, but you're on a farm as well.
Yes. So way back in the day, I came from civilization and married a dairy farmer and landed myself out basically in the middle of the countryside. Not able to drive, no friends other than himself.
Oh, the driverless farm people, they suffer the most.
They do.
And come here, so you came from, where exactly did you come from and where did you end up?
I came from Oran Mór, so it's not huge, but equally there are shops and, you know, there was takeaways. So if you wanted a bag of chips, you could just walk down the road or a bar of chocolate. But when I landed here, if you wanted a bag of chips, you had to put a potato.
So you're a townie who married a farmer?
Pretty much, yes. Yes.
And how did you meet, first of all? And your husband is Paul.
My husband is Paul, 40 years married this year, next month.
Congratulations.
Yes, long suffering. He is amazing. So we met at a marquee. You'd have to be of a certain age to remember what marquees were. They were fabulous and I think they should come back again.
Yeah. We have marquees, but you're specifically talking about a kind of a marquee cultural phenomenon of the 80s.
Of the 80s, yes. So they travelled around all the small towns and Paul just happened to come into Oran Mór, to where I lived, to the marquee. And I met him there. And then the marquees move on from small town to small town. And I think it was my first time ever. It was my first year allowed to go because I was only 17.
Brilliant. So those big sweaty tents where Big Tom and all of them played, they really were the place where dreams came true.
100% in the mineral bar.
Yeah, absolutely. So you quickly married in and Paul decided really to become a farmer himself, didn't he?
He did. Now, Paul is one of 10, so...
Wow.
He's number seven, no, eight. He's number eight and say his brothers ahead of him all opted to not go into agriculture.
Yeah.
So by the time it came to Paul, I think his dad was maybe running out of options and kind of like clutching at straws. So he said to Paul, are you going to stay at home or are you not? And then Paul loved it, so he did. So, yes, that was kind of how he landed into farming at such a young age. I'd say he probably was at it since he was 16, maybe.
Wow. And so you went into this. Did you become a farmer yourself?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. I went to university after school and I studied IT back in the day when the computer was the size of a whole room, air-conditioned. Probably now on my phone. And then I worked in IT for a couple of years before we got married. And then I continued to work until our first child was born, maybe 3 years after we had got married. And then I gave it up because it just wasn't worth it to try and organise somebody to look after her.
Yeah, because it's an all-consuming thing, isn't it? Enterprise, the dairy farm. And we're talking the 90s here. I mean, that was a difficult time for farming, wasn't it?
It was very difficult. It started off really well. Paul worked like his pants off for years and he really made a great go of it. He spent a lot of money on reclaiming land and building buildings and you name it. And then things were really good for a while. We were renting quota because back in the day there was only so much quota you could own and then it was available to rent, but then it transpired that it wasn't really available to rent. So it was like a fairy tale. And then overnight, that rented quota disappeared. So we had just built this very large milking parlour and it had the capacity for a lot of milk And then all we ever got in the new bulk tank was a dribble in the bottom, because that kind of happened around that time, but half the milk quota on us disappeared. So after that, it went downhill seriously to the point where by 1999, we were looking around and going, you know, we don't really have enough money to sustain us. The farm was small, reasonably fragmented, et cetera, et cetera. So I decided to start baking to supplement the farm income. By that stage, we had 5 children under 7. Don't know what was causing it, Oliver.
5 children under 7?
I know. The farmer in me says Paul just wanted somebody to stand in every gap from here to the far field. But,
I actually know how that feels. There's a job for everyone in a farm. You can toddle around, you can stand up at all. You can stand in a gap. Very good. Wow, that sounds like a really tough time. But you start making, what a decision that, start baking, and that's some decision you made, isn't it?
Well, it had to be on the farm because the kids were too small and Paul was still farming, so it wasn't as if that he was available to look after them. And agriculture or dairy farming is not something you can get out of overnight. There has to be a lot of thought put into how you transition out of it. So it was, the baking just suited what I was doing at home, and it was all very part-time. We provided bread for, at the time, Moran's and the Weir in Kilcalgan.
Yep.
Pretty famous.
Famous restaurant.
Yeah. So I then would prep the evening before. I would make the bread in the morning and I would drive it over once the kids were gone to school, and then I'd come back and do all my sort of mammy things and then do it again that evening. And then I'd often bring the kids out with me and they would sit on upturned buckets and they would learn the spelling. So all of my girls are, we call them spelling police, because there's nothing they can't spell.
So they sat every day
and we learned spelling.
And your bacon, is it? It all started in the bike shed on the farm.
Yes. So back then, home baking wasn't necessarily in your kitchen. It wasn't allowed. So we had a bicycle shed, which was, say, opposite the door of the house on the line of the agricultural shed with, the door facing us. It was the size of, I suppose, 2 small bathrooms, you know, that sort of rectangular shape. So it was an easy enough job to get rid of the bikes and sort of fix up the walls, etc. I bought some second-hand equipment, and in there I went.
And to make matters worse, there were health issues in the family as well that you were also trying to deal with.
There were. That was a bit later on. So we, at the time in 99, I happily just baked bread for Moran's Weir and then other shops as they came on board.
Mm.
And then by 2003, that was the pee or get off the pot time, really, for me and for us. One of the kids got sick, Maeve, number 3 child, and she needed a bit of time and attention, and it was proving very difficult. Paul was still working all the hours God sent on the farm. I hadn't expanded the bakery beyond what I could do, but certainly not to the point where I could take time off, because if you're baking bread every day and people depend on you, then it's very hard to take a week off, because what do they do?
Of course.
So it was very much a decision-making time for us. And Paul says, I said, I have no recollection. Either the cows go, the bakery goes, or I go. I don't think I would have gone. But anyways, he believed me enough that we sat down, had a decent conversation, and we decided to let the cows go.
The cows had to go?
Yeah.
Literally baking till the cows go home.
100%. So that transition probably took a year. Our eldest boy at the time, Owen, who's now in London, he used to milk the cows every morning before he went to school. He was only, 14, 15 maybe.
Yeah.
And he would do that so that Paul could come in to the bakery with me and see if we could make more so that we could get to the point where we can go, we can live on this income. And then once we knew where we were there, then the whole lot went up for sale. So at that point then we moved.
Were you hopeful? Were you optimistic?
I'm always optimistic.
It sounds like it. Yeah, you'd have to be.
I'm a glass half full sort of person, Oliver.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 2 ways you can be in this world, and the other way is just, it's very negative. So, like, you have to try and see the positive. I have a motto in business that there's no such thing as a good day and a bad day. There's only a good day and a good learning day. A good learning day is where you take what happened during the day and go, okay, I learned something from that, so that was a valuable lesson. You don't learn much from your good days because you just get complacent.
Yeah.
So equally, when life throws stuff at you, you just kind of go, okay, you know, where was the good thing in that? For me, the good thing out of me getting sick that time was it made us transition. It was the catalyst for change. So we probably never would have.
And you were brave enough to make the decision as well, which is...
Well, I mean, Paul was brave enough because for me, it was an easy decision. Mm-hmm. Agriculture is a bit like, a religious vocation. Mm-hmm. It's ingrained. And it was a big decision for him and he made it. So, yes, it was brave.
Yeah, it's an emotional thing. So Foods of Athenry was up and running, flying away. And you have another challenge just over 10 years ago, 2011.
Yes, lots of opportunities to make lemonade, as they say on this place. So by 2010, we were doing really well. We were baking bread in a much larger scale, as well as other fresh wheat baked type products. And then we had enough money saved that we thought, you know what, let's add on another bakery and do free from better than it's been done at the time.
Yeah.
So we did some research, really thought this was a good idea. There was an upsurge in people who were choosing to eat better, choosing to eat gluten-free. And obviously we have our celiac community who are diagnosed. So we started work on reclaiming some of the other sheds. So basically, all we've ever done down the years is basically repurpose the agricultural sheds and very little greenfield builds, only to maybe join two sheds that had a gap before. So we started to work on a second bakery that would service that free-from community, be it gluten-free, dairy-free, egg-free, vegan.
So it's a big expansion.
A big expansion. Mm-hmm. And I started working on a new range, spoke to the retailers, everything was very positive. Bought equipment, so basically none of the equipment is shared. Bakeries are fully separate, so whatever you had in one bakery you were then rebuying, be it, you know, ovens or coolers or whatever. So they were all sitting on pallets waiting to go in. The packaging was bought, and we had a fire in the wheat bakery, which was the only one that was operational at the time, and the whole place burnt down, including the machines on pallets.
Everything burnt to the ground.
It was a
birthday. You were inside celebrating. Can you paint that picture?
It was Paul's 50th birthday, yes. So we weren't actually in the bakery. It was kind of a lazy morning. The kids were about, they were slightly older, obviously. Kids were about and we were inside and eating the breakfast. And the house actually is within, 30 feet maybe of the bakery. Obviously, because it was a farmhouse and it was an agricultural building. So we were sitting in. I remember the weather was warm and the window was open. And I heard a sound that sounded a little bit like air brakes. You know, it just had that whooshing sound.
Yeah.
And I said to Paul, oh, there might be a lorry outside. And we knew that there was nobody to take the lorry in. So at that point, say Paul or Owen would have gone out. So somebody stuck their head out to see who it was, and then Owen said, I see flames. So, yeah, that was that.
Wow. So everything is destroyed. How do you pick yourself up from that?
It's not easy. It's multifaceted. So emotionally, really difficult. I think I was in denial for a long time. I stopped going out to the bakery. So I left it to everyone else. Owen took charge to some degree. It was a very emotional time that way. He sort of said to his father, they walked us and said, look, Dad, we did it before, we'll do it again, only this time I'm older and I'll help. So he had just finished university and was working for us. So he organised, the dumper trucks and the skips and a team of young people that he knew that all came and helped clear the place out. So that was it from an emotional point of view. From a financial point of view, also really difficult. We were underinsured, our fault, not the insurers, because we hadn't thought to insure all that new equipment because,
we would have had it in. Yeah.
Exactly. We would have had it in the new building within a week or two, and then we'd have had the insurer come out to walk it and, reassess our policy. So it was just the timing was really poor.
It was. It's also 2011, the context financially in the economy and trying to borrow money and all of that.
Oh, the Celtic Tiger had well and truly died at that stage. He was alive and kicking when we had all these grand ideas. And, it would have worked really well if the road stayed, you know, clearer. But by the time we were trying to come back, oh God, he had died. And we couldn't get finance at all. The banks wouldn't lend. In hindsight now, I understand why, but back then I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand how they just wouldn't trust us.
A successful business, yeah.
Yeah, take our word for it that we would come back. This would be fine. Mm-hmm. So we had no choice but to scrimp and save. And then we had savings ourselves, which all went into us. We had some, I don't know, life policies maybe, I don't remember now, which we cashed all out and put it in and still didn't have enough money to come back. So we sold a field.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Paul's best field. So we sold a field to keep us going, and that's what got us sort of back to the point where we were back.
For generations of farming happening on that plot in Athenry, that's like severing an arm, isn't it?
It is. It is for some people, but I'm very pragmatic. And then Paul sort of came around to the idea. And there are times he looks over the wall and goes, oh, that's my best field. I used to go great grass, or, you know, yeah. Oh, I remember, you know. And we had, when our oldest was only a toddler, Paula was reclaiming that field. And we have a picture on the wall of her sitting in a field of dandelions. She's only about 1.5. And he said, do you remember that picture? Do you remember, you know, and it was all that field. And I said, Paul, that field owes us nothing. That field is the best field that a farmer could ever have.
Yeah.
That field got us back on our feet, and no field is better in this country than that field. And I look over that wall and I am proud of that field, and I am, you know, so proud of the farmer who bought it of us at market value and didn't sort of know we were under pressure and try and knock the price down. So no,
amazing.
It was a means to an end.
Siobhan Lawless, therapist and baker. Yeah, land is just a land. Yeah, tell the whole country that.
The land is just the land. You know, it's like we're not meant, you know, we're meant to move forward. So why would you let something like that stand in your way if you have an opportunity to, you know, to fix it?
I think we know from your attitude, this is how you picked yourself up again, with the help of your whole family, of course, and all the friends involved. When do you kind of, roughly when, about 2015, you sort of feel that you're sort of back on your feet again? So it's a number of years, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, it was a couple of years. So like no finance forthcoming. Like there was a small overdraft, don't get me wrong, but there was no like grand gestures of here, you know, here's €100,000 loan or anything.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So we were closed for a year from 2011 to 2012. And then we were back in the summer of 12, because fire was the summer of 11. In fact, it's actually the anniversary of the fire next week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the end of June.
The end of June.
So
the birthday party, forever ruined.
A year later, we had a half a year's trading. So we had a trading loss. Yeah. Significant trading loss, obviously, in 11 and 12, because we only had 6 months trading.
But if we fast forward in the practical sense, I mean, it's a huge success now, the Foods of Athenry. Tell us how many people are working full time over there.
So by the time we get to 2023, we have probably 28 people working here, all from sort of like a reasonably small radius. Yeah. They all come from like country towns around and about. As time went by, it was easier to get really great staff because people were tired of driving into the city with traffic. So we have a great core staff, absolutely amazing. Some of them with us a really long time. We have still people here who were here at the time of the fire.
Great. So 20, so that's an amazing success. And you're distributed everywhere, aren't you? People know that from pretty much every major supermarket in the country.
Yes. So the Foods of Athenry range specialise in, as I said, gluten-free, dairy-free, egg-free, vegan. And obviously in the last couple of years, state has intervened again and veganism is on the increase. So we were just obviously the right place, right time with the range of products we have. So with our own range, we actually specialise, say, in ambient products. So things like that are dry, like cereals, crackers, bars, cookies. So you'll find them in all the major retailers, independent food service. You'll find us in hotels, cafes, on Aer Lingus, and so on and so forth. And we export, say, around Europe, a little bit into Australia and the USA. And in fact, in Australia, we deal with a speciality vegan distributor, and we'll be making his mince pies in the next 2 weeks.
You're making mince pies for Australia at the moment.
Yes, so they'll go frozen.
They'll go
and
frozen.
Then they'll be defrosted.
And they're ready.
Yes.
51551 is our text. There's a lovely text coming in for you, Siobhan. Tell Siobhan that I took her rich brown bread, brown soda bread recipe from her website a few years ago and did, as she suggests on our webpage, make it my own. I make about 8 loaves a week that are loved by my husband, myself and 5 kids. Visitors complimented and I always reference the foods of Athenry. So thank you, says Margaret. Someone's also saying, I'm a huge fan of the cranberry and hazelnut toasts. So congratulations, Siobhan, from Yvonne in Dublin. And there's other ones there besides. They're the ones I was referring to. I was calling them the crackers, but the cranberry and hazelnut toasts are...
So basically, it's a soda bread that we bake.
Yes.
It's gluten-free soda bread, and then we slice it and dry it.
Dry it out. And it's hugely
So it's both a toast and a cracker.
It's fancy. You know you're having something fancy.
It's fancy.
It's a Friday afternoon purchase.
We're very fancy around here.
Yeah, very fancy in Athenry, of course. Listen, Siobhan Lawless, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's an amazing story. And we wish you and the family, business and everything, all the success in the world. Much deserved after everything we've heard there. So to all the folks in the foods of Athenry, bon appétit.
Thank you so much, Oliver. And thank you to all the people who continue to buy our products and the people who phoned in with such nice comments. It's really heartwarming. It's why we stay at it.
Lovely. We take a wee break.